The Law of Equivalent Exchange. This is Tim in Tokyo reading Fullmetal Alchemist in English from Viz.
And this is Patrick in Kumamoto reading Hagane no Renkin Jutsushi, the original Japanese version by Hiromu Arakawa, put out by Gangan Comics.
So before we get into our chapter this time, I wanted to mention a couple of things that our friend Memory Echo pointed out to us about Chapter 74 via Twitter. Things that I was sort of wishing that I had noticed / researched before we recorded. In the scene where Hawkeye is speaking in code to Mustang, I had kind of subconsciously wondered, like, how does he know when she's going to start speaking in code? But I didn't notice, and I guess you didn't notice either because we didn't talk about it. But at the beginning, when she's starting to speak in code, she wraps her mug on the table. And then again, when she's finished. But I think it would have been more effective if that had happened in a scene, in a panel with no dialogue. Because I think the dialogue distracts us and we don't notice the clunk clunk or whatever the sound effect was.
Okay, so is she saying that it's so subtle that a spy wouldn't have been able to figure out, and that, and also most of our readership probably going to miss it too?
Well, and Memory Echo pointed out that her first exposure to Fullmetal was the anime, so right. It would have been a lot more noticeable in the anime with actual sound. Also, you know, we were wondering about the lizardy guy who we hadn't seen in forever, who showed up in Chapter 74. She says his name is Bido, and he's part gecko. And as I think we did mention, he was part of Greed's crew, she says.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this time we are on Chapter 76, Shape of a Person, Shape of a Stone.
What could they be referring to?
Right. Well, yeah, it's gotten to on page 2 of the chapter. I mean, we start out talking about different names for the Philosopher's Stone. The Sorcerer's Stone, of course, American Harry Potter readers will know that expression. The Stone of Heaven, the Grand Elixir, the Red Tincture, the Fifth Element.
The Scooty Booty.
Isn't that from Teen Titans Go?
I don't know. The Stuff.
And we see Ed talking with Miles and some other soldiers about the various forms that the Philosopher's Stone takes, but it tends to always be quite small. Ed's never seen one that was bigger than a pebble, he says.
Is he flashing back to this?
Well, so I think what's happening here, we're getting a scene change that is pointing out, like, here is one Philosopher's Stone that's bigger than a pebble because it's a guy. It's Hohenheim. Right. And, yeah, we've got three panels here reminding us of the previous chapter where Izumi and her husband are looking at Hohenheim and she's saying, Mr. Hohenheim, you yourself are a Philosopher's Stone. And we don't see them again this chapter. I think that's there just for people who missed the previous issue of Gangan Comics.
Right.
Make sure you get that point. I mean, we haven't really talked about that much, but you know, the idea that this was originally serialized and people are, you know, a lot of people are going to miss chapters or maybe not see, even if they get every chapter, we don't see the same characters sometimes for months and months and months, and to remind you.
Yeah, it's not like a weekly comic. It's a monthly comic, and it's in an anthology, so it's, you know. And depending on where you live, for example, Gangan is not necessarily the comic that gets into all convenience stores. You know, like
Shukan Sunday or something.
Yeah. Afternoon does, and Afternoon is kind of on a little bit fringy. Not nearly as fringy as it used to be, I don't think. But yeah, so like Gangan is not necessarily one that you would automatically find. So like if you're living in the boonies, then, you know, you really have to trek up to one of the bigger bookstores, you know?
Yeah, it's not unlike trying to read Marvel and DC in the 60s or 70s and hunting around at all the outlets in town to try to find the next issue and missing some inevitably.
That's right. Which would include like pharmacies and drugstores. Yeah.
Yeah, in Centerville, Iowa, we used to go to, there was a bookstore we went to. There were two supermarkets that we would look at. You know, there was a convenience store. And sometimes we'd be going around from place to place trying to find that issue.
when I realized that the next, you know, like I was taking piano lessons at a place called Major Music on Memorial Drive in Atlanta. And while I was waiting for my mom, sometimes I would pop next door. There was a used record store and they had a couple of long boxes of back issues of stuff. Hmm. And it was called Craig's Collectibles. I remember that. And I remember going there and like flipping through stuff. I didn't have any money, so I was mostly just looking at stuff. And the stuff I was interested in was like Richard Corbin, the magazines like Heavy Metal or 1994, because I was super young and they were not for... They were for adults. And so where else can I peruse adult material? You know.
So we've got a title page here that is showing that wall carving. What's the expression I'm searching for here? It's that
like a mandala, not really a mandala, but it's like a very, you know, looks very alchemical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just and went showing through a the five spots on the circle that are, you know, we're seeing, you know, Amestris being done that way to form a transmutation circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just by coincidence, I ran across a discussion where somebody was looking for this circle of life thing. And this one philosopher, alchemist, had basically like, come up with a whole theory of everything, like everything, you know, mm-hmm. And he wrote like this, I don't know, 40 volume thing on everything. And he tied it all together and all the parts that don't fit together, because obviously they don't fit together. He uses magic. It's like magic fills those gaps, you know, like putty. And so, but it's interesting because a lot of those, like alchemical things, they're looking for perfection. They're trying to find, like, the goal is to create a perfect being and a perfect element, right? And that gets mentioned in here, so that was interesting. And in fact, like in some of the diagrams, they show how the sun was born from the earth and things like this, and the center of the earth is darkness. And I could just draw a creepy smile and like one eye on it, and it would be perfect.
Also in this panel on the title page, we can see the broken beaker that the black fuzzy homunculus was in. But we don't get any more flashback to Hohenheim's origin story right. In this chapter. I don't know if there is any more really to say about that. So then we're back with Ed and Miles and the soldiers, and Miles and the soldiers are talking about quote unquote neutralizing Kimblee and the two guys with him. And Ed
to murder
clarifies,
or not to murder.
Yeah, Ed clarifies they're talking about killing them.
Yeah.
And you know, Ed and Al have promised each other that they're not going to kill anybody, and they're trying to avoid being involved in that, but Miles is so, like, your thinking is too nice.
Naive.
Yeah, you can't get through life in this environment.
So when you say retire, do you mean gold watch or golden bullet? What are we talking about?
And yeah, Miles reminds him the first law of Briggs is only the fit survive.
Yeah, and so, and this really is going to get pushed to the edge, but I like it. I like the fact that he's trying to take this stance, naive as it may be, because I think it's an important like in Galaxy Express, the comic, Galaxy Express 999, that main character does have to make a choice to murderize people again and again, but he still, his boundaries are a little different, but he still, like, is trying to keep his humanity. Like, he never enjoys it, and he always, you know, it's always like a last ditch kind of thing where he's got no other choice. So, but he does end up making the choice to survive. So, you know, in that way, it's, I guess, more realistic. In this, you have Miles as the counterbalance to tell them, man, kids, kids and their pacifism. So cute.
Although, after Miles and this other soldier have left there and they're talking about Ed and Al's attitude about this, and Miles says at the end of the scene he kind of envies them for being able to think that way, because he's too, I guess, battle-hardened to think that way anymore.
I mean, what do you think? Okay, Tim, let's put it out there. Should Batman kill the Joker? I mean, if it's TV Joker, all right, if we're talking Batman 66 Joker, don't kill any of those guys, because they never kill anybody.
Right.
You know, like, well, yeah, things get stolen, nobody dies.
There's virtually no murder in any episode of that show.
Not even bones are broken, you know? Like, nobody scratches a nail. There's a lot of pow, zang, whap, boof. But, like, no real, you know, murderizing, like, happens.
No injury even, yeah.
So in that case, yes, okay. Let him go through the revolving door that is Arkham Asylum. But
or, yeah, Gotham State Penitentiary in that show, because Arkham didn't exist yet.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. So, but, like, but in the harsher world of the post, I guess, post-60s, DC Comics, so what do you think? You know, should they have been murderizing the bad guys all along?
Well, I mean, I guess there's a case to be made, because that Joker is quite dangerous. But, you know, the problem is, if you kill him, then you can't have any more Joker stories.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that that's, you know, in the end, it's all about serving the story. But, you know, like, I'm just saying, as a hypothetical thing, you know, I mean, I think that's what was one of the more interesting things about The Dark Knight Returns is, you know, what's he going to do? What should he have done? What he did? Sure, you know, and, like, yeah, but that's to show that Batman is broken Batman. You know what I mean? Like, The Dark Knight Returns Batman is broken Batman. It's because he's been away from it too long, you know? So anyway, so I mean, I think it's an important theme in this comic, and something that people should think about.
Yeah, I mean, Miles is certainly right that Kimberly is very dangerous, and they could potentially save quite a few lives by getting rid of him. So, yeah, I mean, which is the more... this is a different context than usually said in, which is more pro-life, killing him or letting him live? Because more lives are probably going to be lost with him alive.
So, you know, like, taking it back to DC, if they had more characters, because there are some, if they had more characters that were rehabilitized, and that, like, a couple times, like, Two-Face came close to being... you know, a decent guy. Like, he, you know, he almost let the good side take over, and then, you know, other bad things happen. But, you know, like, they, at least they show that there is some hope for some of these characters. Catwoman shows that there's some hope. And of course, this is all just serving the story because they need somebody to lock on Batman's lips. But, so in this case, yeah, he's he is quite dangerous. Cut his hands off, you know, Mace Windu style.
You know, just get some bionic hands then.
So that's right, automail.
Well, yeah, in this case, automail. Okay, so then we go to Scar, Winry, that group, who are still in this tunnel that they went into several chapters ago. And they've sat down and they're looking at Scar's brother's notes about alchemy and trying to understand them. They're asking questions about it that Scar is answering, like, what does Aurelian mean? Which is word for gold, he says.
Mm. So Mei Chang, it's really difficult because, like, when you live in Japan, like, Chang itself, like, is there's the Chinese name Chang, which is Zhang, or in Japanese Chang, right? And like Jackie Chang, but but then there's the diminutive that you say instead of San, right? Chan, like Mei Chang, hey Mei Chang, like the character in Totoro. So that's Mei Chang. So it's so we have to say, you know, Mei Chang, and you know, but it I still get
different intonation.
Yeah, I still get confused. But she's talking about, like, what is it in English? True people or true person?
True beings. In Xing, immortals are called true beings.
Oh, true beings.
True beings are considered perfect souls, just as gold is thought to be the perfect metal. Maybe that's why immortals are called beings of gold. Now, what's up with Winry's facial expression in that last panel on this page? She looks really kind of upset about something.
If I just saw this picture and didn't know what this said in here.
I see there's some little tiny question marks next to her, so maybe it means that she's just really puzzled. She's not following this.
It's like philosophy hard. You know, it's, you know, I don't know. I would, if I were just looking at this panel without knowing what was going on, I would think somebody farted.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed those.
Super uncomfortable.
Hadn't noticed those tiny question marks before. Yeah, so I think this is supposed to be a look of puzzlement.
Okay, so the dumber people on the left are like, what? What?
Well, yeah, then, the Chimera guy on the left has also got a couple little question marks. Yeah.
And then the smarter ones on the right are like, ooh, interesting.
Yeah, Marco and May and Scar. Now, May mentions that there's a theory that the person who brought alchemy to Xing was an immortal with golden hair and golden eyes. And Winry says, golden hair and eyes sounds like Ed and Al. And it's got me wondering if maybe did Hohenheim bring alchemy to Xing?
Yes, it has to be, right? I mean, I don't think it's father. I don't think it's father.
I think it's
Hohenheim.
No.
Hohenheim, the traveler, you know? Hohenheim wandering the earth for centuries.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's mentioned that his alchemy is Xing alchemy.
Right? So it kind of ties together. And the fact that she mentions it's here that, you know, I mean, obviously it could still be father, but it's got to be one of those two.
Yeah, but I think Winry mentioning that it sounds like Ed and Al is kind of meant to lead us toward, it's actually their father.
Right. So we have the Hohenheim alchemy, which is Ren Tan Jutsu, right? And then we have the father alchemy, which is Ren Kin Jutsu. And so, you know, like the one is, the Xin one is about helping and healing, right? And then the other one is, everybody keeps mentioning something off about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of destruction involved.
You know? Yeah.
But it's not like Mei Chang can't also kick some butt using her alchemy as well. But she blows up stuff too.
So Yoki appears and says he's found the exit of the tunnel. And so they go out into the sunlight. There's snow there, and they're thinking...
Yoki's my Foswell for this series.
Foswell from Spider-Man.
Foswell from Spider-Man.
Early Spider-Man.
That's right, early Spider-Man. Just shows up every once in a while, and I'm always happy when he does, you know? I mean, not at first, but like later, he grows on you.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And here he is, being helpful. You're like, Yoki, being helpful.
Well, they both start out as bad guys, right? Yeah. Foswell and Yoki.
That's right.
So they're going to head for Briggs, and then by a huge stroke of luck, they run across Al, half buried in snow, Winry recognizes him, calling out, "Over here, help me," and digs him out.
What's funny is that he's saying in Japanese, he's saying, "Oi, help me." Oi, oi. He says it like three times. Oi, oi, help me. Like the fly. Help me. The original fly. I know him. Way too far callbacks. But yeah, that's, coincidence.
And he's able to tell them, you know, the reason why he's out there in the first place was to warn them that they should stay away from Briggs because troops from Central have taken it over and Major General Armstrong's not even there now. She's in Central City.
Now, he doesn't have to breathe, but it's like he's been holding his breath. He makes a...
it's buah in English.
Oh my gosh, that's direct translation. It's buah in Japanese.
Exactly. We'll get back to chapter 76 in a moment. On our Patreon page, our patrons-only monthly podcast on early issues of The Amazing Spider-Man is coming to a close, and we're taking a poll of our Patreon supporters contributing $4 or more per month regarding what the new podcast topic will be. The choices are as follows. 1. Captain Marvel by Jim Starlin. 2. 1970s Occult Marvel, including Doctor Strange, Early Spider-Woman, Werewolf by Night, Ghost Rider, Son of Satan, and more. 3. Cap in the Nixon Era, Captain America and the Falcon, issues 153 to 186 by Steve Englehart. Or Silver Age Batman, the comics era that had a lot to do with the tone of Batman 66. Voting has started and will end at 11:59 p.m. on September 29th. Remember, you must be a Deconstructing Comics Patreon supporter for at least $4 a month in order to vote, and to hear the podcast on the winning topic. $4 and up patrons also get access to our discussion of the first 50 issues of The Amazing Spider-Man, including annuals and Spidey's origin story in Amazing Fantasy 15. Join us today at patreon.com/deconcomics. So they're not sure where to go now, so they decide to just sit down and eat because Al has brought food for them.
That's a very Japanese thing.
Yeah, just sit down in the snow.
I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. Let's just eat something. If you've ever seen middle schoolers eat in front of a convenience store, just eat anywhere. Eat out on the street.
And Winry is wondering, you know, won't Kimblee and his men get suspicious that Al is not with Ed now? And he says, "Don't worry, Big Brother's got that covered." And so, mysteriously at first, we see there is another identical suit of armor sitting next to Ed. Seems like there are two Al's. But then at the bottom of the next page, we find that there's a soldier hiding inside the armor and kind of acting as Al. He's kind of short. His head is way below the head of the armor. And he doesn't know how to talk like Al. So when Miles tells him, you know, gives him an order or says, "Let's go," instead of saying, "Okay," as Ed later prompts him to, he says, "Aye, sir." Which doesn't sound much like Al.
Yeah, and then we see the guy who's inside.
Yeah. And Kimblee is kind of puzzled by the way that this suit of armor is walking. Seems kind of odd.
Well, no, because he tells him, like, you have to talk like Al. You know, you can't talk like that. And so he's saying, Mateo
Nisan. Yeah, wait for me, Big Brother.
In falsetto.
Squee, squee, wobble, wobble.
It says here in parentheses, falsetto.
Oh. Okay.
Uragoe. So he's like, Nisan, wee!
Okay, yeah, there's no mention of falsetto in the English.
Okay, and so that's why That's why Ed is like, just shut up and walk. You know?
Walk faster.
Yeah.
Ed asks, where are Kimberly and his men starting their search? And one of the soldiers says, see that vertical mine shaft in the center of town, sir? They're going in through there to check the tunnels. So, yeah, we can see this big kind of tower. Not a super tall tower, but it's taller than all the buildings around it, which is the mine shaft.
Somehow reminds me of Big Sight in Tokyo, you know.
A little bit like the roof of, that's a convention center. We used to go to comics events there. I haven't been there in years now.
Yeah, it's been a while for me, too.
So we see Kimberly with his men. Now, it's interesting. Kimberly seems to have had two pairs of men who were actually chimeras.
Mm.
And one pair of them are now, you know, escaping with Scar and Winry in that group. They're not around anymore, but these guys are still here working with Kimberly.
And he doesn't treat them very well.
And when Ed comes along, Kimberly says, if you're here, I must be searching in the right place. Because they're searching for Scar's group, right?
Yeah.
But Ed says, I'm only here because you promised to give me the Philosopher's Stone if I helped you catch Scar. But Kimberly doesn't believe him because he says, you're here to buy time until the snipers move into position, aren't you? And he says he knew because you could cut the tension in the air with a knife.
You know what? You know what hurts? What hurts is like when somebody's about to get sniped and everybody around is going like,
just cringing.
Cringing, waiting for it to happen. Like, ooh, don't get blood on me. That's a bad sign.
And we see the sniper with Miles. Oh, it's the same guy who was in Al's armor. We see the empty armor behind him. He's getting ready to take a shot at Kimberly, and then Kimberly kicks up a bunch of powdery snow, and so you can't see anything.
I mean, when Kimberly opens his arms wide, that is the time to take the shot.
Yeah, you had a chance there, guy. You blew it.
You blew it.
And in this cloud of snow, Ed starts getting attacked by the chimeras. And he hadn't been sure that these guys were chimeras until now, but now it's obvious.
Just for one brief second, I thought, oh my God, does Kimberly have, like, animal arms now? Just for a second, I thought Kimberly was attacking.
Ed thinks that maybe he can hide within the cloud of snow, but they can smell him. So they find him immediately, and the lion-y guy has got his hand around Ed's throat. But Ed turns his automail to the stabby shape and stabs him in the arm.
Yeah. Lion-O and Gorillio.
Yeah, the other guy's kind of a gorilla. And we see him later just kind of hanging off a pipe like a monkey or an ape or something.
And you smell like one, too.
And now this was one of a few places in this chapter where I wasn't quite sure what happened. But I guess that Ed fell into the shaft because he couldn't see where he was going. We see him, like, there's a sound effect slip, and he hits his head on a pipe, and then he falls down the mine shaft.
Mm.
But I wasn't sure exactly how he fell to hit his head on the pipe. Because it says slip, but it seems like he...
We really needed another panel here.
Yes. It seems like he must have mistaken a bad step there, but the pipe seems to be the pipe that the gorilla guy is hanging from in the next panel. So how would Ed have been above that?
I see what you're saying.
So yeah, you're right that we needed at least one more panel here to make this clear. I would imagine they must have tried to figure it out in the anime and make it clearer, but have not seen
that. So he hits his head on the way down, and in the next panel, the gorilla guy is already following him down, apparently.
And the gorilla guy says, huh? As Ed is falling into the mine shaft, wah! And then there's a sound effect, fwee, and crack, and crunch. So, yeah, the sound effects are also kind of confusing. What is fwee? Is that the sound of him falling through the air?
Where's the fwee?
I'm showing it to Patrick here through Zoom.
Oh, that's in Japanese, it's dom, which is like an impact. So fwee doesn't make any sense.
I imagine it's like Wile E. Coyote falling off the cliff.
But
yeah, if it's not in the Japanese.
Well, I mean, it's elongated, but it's dong. You know, but it's still an impact sound.
Yeah.
Like it's an echoing.
Well, I mean, we have crack and crunch after that, so those are the impact. But apparently the translator decided that we needed a sound of falling here, too.
I mean, I think the screaming as the screaming, like it's doing the job, the double work.
Yeah, it's whoa.
It's supposed to be that he's hitting several things on the way down and breaking things.
Yeah, okay.
Know? So it goes, no, don't, biggie bucky, like that.
I see.
And I think the don is specifically right here, this big old slab of cement, and then the biggie bucky is from lower, like where we can't see.
So Kimbley goes down the stairs and he sees a bunch of footprints in the snow, which I guess would have been Scar and that group.
Mm.
And Ed is lying on the floor there saying, owie, owie.
In the Japanese, he's just like flailing. The sound effects are jitabata, which means flailing.
Okay.
It's not actual sounds. It's just him flailing and just like, doing a blank in pain.
Okay. Kind of. Yeah. The English has the same thing, except it's set up like English with the exclamation points at the opposite end.
Interesting. But to me, it looks like he must have hit his head on the way down because he's holding his head.
And he says, damn it, I'm going to be even shorter now. So, yeah, he must have fallen on his head, and he thinks that's going to make him shorter.
Now, the next word I don't understand, dynamite. Dynamite.
He sees some crates of dynamite.
Oh, dynamite.
Not bananas, but dynamite. I wonder if anybody's going to get that reference.
Well, see, bananas would have worked for the gorilla guy.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Dynamite and bananas. Okay, so they were both magazines that Scholastic used to make. You know, Dynamite was for like 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, and bananas was junior high and high school.
You know what? For the longest time, I held on to my copy of Dynamite that had the article on the Dark Crystal. So, because I was so obsessed with that, I still have some other magazines, but like Dark Crystal was my obsession.
Okay.
At that time. So that was, I think I had that one. The only other Dynamite I had was, I think the cover was like Shazam or like one of those 70s live action superhero type.
Yeah, I think the issues you're talking about must have been a little late for me. I probably wasn't reading Dynamite anymore. I got in almost on the ground floor. I think the first issue I got was like number 3 or something. It had Herbie the Love Bug on the cover.
Yep, you're not dating yourself.
No, not at all.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so those were like Scholastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so did you do any of those Scholastic book fair type of deals where you'd get a newsletter or something like that? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how I got it. Because like every month we'd get, you know, the little flyer of like the books that were available, and there's a little order form, and we'd, you know, I'd get some cash and take it back to school and they'd send it in. And then, you know, a few weeks later, we'd get our books in the mail. Which was always, you know, a big occasion. Wow, the books came. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being very excited. A comedian, Gary Goldman. I saw a video of his where he talked about, like, today where you can. He said, I just bought a Kindle book, 500-page book, and downloaded it to my phone in, like, 5 seconds. Much different than the delivery system I used to have, which was the Scholastic Book Fair, where you go in and you pay for it, and when you graduate high school, they give it to you. It's like taking forever. You know what? I still have one book, at least. I think some of the kids' books I have upstairs that I gave to my daughter might have been, I got through that process, but I can't remember which ones. Mm. I just remember being excited about them. But I have one book, which is the Great Comic Books Quiz by Jerry, guy who invented the Joker.
Ordway? Is that right?
Is that right?
We are so far off topic.
Jerry Robinson. Robinson.
Okay.
But no, but that was like before I got into comics. That was like a big in for me because I knew all the superhero origins without ever reading any of those. So that was kind of like that trivia book was a big in and my first exposure.
I wonder if that was, I don't know if. Might have been a collection because, you know, in those early issues of Dynamite, there was a monthly feature on superhero origins. And we saw that was where I first saw the Spider-Man origin and the Batman origin and all that stuff. And then when they covered most of the heroes and they started doing villains.
Well, this has like comic strips and comic books. And yeah, it's a really great book. I met him at a Comic-Con one time and I really regret now that I didn't buy one of his prints. I should have bought it. It was $50. Why didn't I buy it? I'm so kicking my head. All right, back to the
okay, the Dynamite. That's where we got off track here. The Dynamite.
Yes.
And the Chimeras are saying, you know, it's too wet to use it. You know, they're not feeling threatened by it. But Ed says, Do you guys know what dynamite is made of? And they're saying nitroglycerin and so forth, including ammonium nitrate. And Ed says, good, now what's ammonium nitrate made of? That's easy. Nitric acid and ammonia. They're realizing what he's going to do. Although this was another point where I was a little bit unclear because he does something that puts the ammonia into the air. We just see a panel that says foosh and gaboom and the guys are kind of being thrown back by him, and it looks like the dynamite crate is breaking, and maybe there's some alchemy. Not really any, like, alchemy lightning.
Yeah, I don't see the alchemy lightning, but, I mean, obviously he had to have done some alchemy to
separate the ammonia from the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The smell is like overwhelmed their senses, so they can't smell him anymore, and they're both like lying on the floor saying, "Arg, it stinks."
Yeah. I love it when, you know, like, science, bitches! You know, like, I love that.
So Kimberly understands that Ed is after his Philosopher's Stone. That was Ed's idea to get that away from him rather than kill him. And so Ed's like, what luck. He brought the stone right out. I won't have to search for it after all. And he gets in a fight with Kimberly, and the stone falls out of his hand and down the mine shaft. And also with his stabby implement, Ed scratches the circle on Kimberly's hand. And Ed's thinking he's lost his Philosopher's Stone and he can't use his transmutation circle. And then Kimberly says, "I've got him. Is that what you're thinking?" And then he says, "Like, no, you should have finished me off when you had the chance. You didn't consider I might have another Philosopher's Stone." And we've seen this one before that he put in his mouth some chapters ago, and apparently he like swallowed it, and now he's just able to kind of cough it up at will. It looks like a gumball, and he brings that out of his mouth, and then there's a big explosion.
Well, if you had one that was completely round and one that was shaped like a sharp crystal, which one are you going to have coming up and down your gullet?
Yeah. Yeah, the round one is definitely going to go down better, although little big to swallow, but and we see the tower of the mineshaft collapsing. Several panels here of like an earthquake. It's lots of vibrating and rattling and crashing.
No fatalities, by the way.
No, not that we can see. And then there's a couple of quieter panels as we see the aftermath of the collapse in the shaft. And Ed is lying there and he wakes up and the Chimeras are trapped under the rubble. Ed is thinking, where did Kimblee go? And then he realizes that he's coughing up blood. And we turn the page and we see that this pipe has pierced his left side. And there's blood all over.
Ouchy.
And he kind of coughs. I guess the sound effect is gahoff.
Yeah, it's gabble. Gabble.
Okay. And he collapses. And then Al also collapses. And he says, I'm being pulled again. So I guess similar to when he saw his real self a few chapters ago when he was out in the blizzard. And everybody else is trying to figure out what he means by his soul being pulled. But he's like unconscious and Ed is also unconscious. Now,
even his little feathery thing doesn't look very healthy.
On the last page, there's a dialogue balloon. Ed, who is saying Ed?
That's Wendy. Wendy's saying, isn't it?
Wouldn't she be saying Al?
Yeah.
She doesn't know what happened to Ed.
I mean,
or maybe she's just like wishing Ed was there.
Yeah. That seems likely.
Because, yeah, she can't address Ed. Ed's not there with her. Mm. And so, but it seems like the Al's collapse has something to do with Ed's injury, that there's some kind of link between the two brothers.
Mm.
So that's the end of chapter 76. Sound effects. I chose my sound effect before we started recording. When Kimblee kicks up the snow in the middle of the chapter, the sound effect is bafoosh.
You love the ooshes. You love yeah. those ooshes. Floosh and foosh and, you know. I'm going to go with kapan when he kicks Kimblee's hand. When Ed kicks Kimblee's hand, it's kapan.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a thock in English.
See? It should be a kathock at least. Come on. If it's a double sound here, it should be a double sound in other languages as well.
Yeah, I see your point.
You know, because these sound effects tell the story.
Yeah, they seem to be taking some liberties with the sound effects, particularly with that fwee that has no counterpart in the Japanese.
I guess what they did, what you do, like in when you have comedies in Japan, and they have to put the subtitles, but they're like, nobody's going to get this joke. And so they just write a new joke, hoping that that will explain. But fui is not really the sound, like the falling sound that they think it is. It just doesn't. Fui sounds like a scream you'd make if you're having fun on a roller coaster.
Well, or like a policeman's whistle or something.
Ah, that's very good example. Policeman's whistle.
Mm-hmm.
Great. What I liked about this episode, you and I talking this time, is that you brought up the tangent.
Yeah, it was my fault this time. Dynamite you and brought bananas. Up the tangent.
And I went surfing on that tangent. All right. Kinds of value. All kinds of value in the law of equivalent exchange. So we've given you all lots of value, and so, you know, we're waiting for the equivalent.
Support our Patreon.
That's right. Back rubs would be nice.
Patreon.com/deconcomics. So, any other comments?
Just that, you know, like we're starting to see more things tied together. Again, Kimblee continues to prove that he's one sharp dude, you know? And I like that. I like that, you know, the plans never go exactly as they want them to go. You mm-hmm. know, it's not just that he figured out that he was going to get sniped, but the fact that he also had his backup, you know, Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, he's ready for anything.
One sharp dude. So, you know, that makes him, I mean, something happened to action movies where they stopped showing us how what a badass characters were and they just told us. He's a badass, you know. He looks like a badass. He's wearing the badass uniform, so the badass. But, you know, that when the badassery happens, it wasn't quite earned. But, you know, Kimberly has shown time and time again that he is a slippery, sneaky, smart, you know, dude that dangerous. And he also adds fuel to the, should we just kill him or, you know, find another way debate, because he's like, you should have killed me. So he's like, I'm voting for the kill me now. You know, so yeah, interesting. Some philosophical things come up. I always love that.
Yeah,
alchemical things, you know, interesting things. I have a whole book over there on alchemy and mysticism, and it's mostly it's like one of these Tashin art books things, but it's like super thick, and it's super interesting. And the perfect person, this perfect being that they're talking about. In alchemy, it's a combination of man and woman. It's like a hermaphrodite, has both sexual parts and is like in perfect proportion and is, you know, that's supposed to be the perfect being. Because for them, like for the alchemists, it has to encompass everything. So it has to have the male and the female, has to have everything. One example I can think of where they put that kind of idea on the screen was the adaptation of Michael Moorcock's Jerry Cornelius stories. They did a movie called, I'm not going to remember. The Final Program, spelled P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E, the British spelling, The Final Program. And in that, it happens at the end. They make the perfect being. And you know what? It's a combination of a man and a woman, and it's a Neanderthal. It's a Neanderthal. It's so, you know, so interesting. But it's a weird, weird movie. And unfortunately, because of that movie, Moorcock said, "Yep, no more movies of my stuff." I guess he wasn't happy with the portrayal.
Well, that happens a lot with movie versions.
Yeah. Hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So, don't forget the law of equivalent exchange, which says...
You get what you pay for, and it's better than a kick in the teeth.
Okay, see you next time.
See you next time.
Our theme is Winter Fiend by Cryosyncope. You can follow us on Twitter at LOEE Podcast or email us at LOEEPodcast@deconstructingcomics.com. Support our show on Patreon at patreon.com/deconcomics. See you in 2 weeks. The Law of Equivalent Exchange is a production of deconstructingcomics.com.